Football is king in Alabama. But football comes with a major risk, concussions.
Easiest way to think of that is if you take a snow globe and you shake that snow globe up, everything is really chaotic. All the little pieces are kind of flying. And that's sort of what's going on in your brain.
This is Issues and Ails, Concussions and the Price of Playing Football. I'm Andrew Yeager. In the next hour, we'll discuss how increased awareness of the dangers of concussions is affecting the game. We'll hear from doctors, parents, and former players.
The short-term memory loss, different mood swings, my attention, managing my day seems to be one of my tougher things. I never was like that.
Stay with us for Issues and Ails, Concussions and the Price of Playing Football.
This is your NPR news station, 90.3 WBHM and 91.5 WSGN. I'm Andrew Yeager. In just a few short weeks, the state of Alabama will come alive. People will fill stadiums by the thousands to watch athletes don pads and helmets and then smash into each other in an effort to move a brown oblong ball down a field. I'm of course talking about football. In a culture fractured by political, social, and religious differences, football may be the closest thing we have to a common touchstone. College football is king in Alabama, but the sport's not just a Southern thing. The NFL is the most popular and most profitable sports league in the country. Arguably part of the appeal of the sport is the hard hits, the players that slam to the ground in a show of superhuman strength. For years, no one thought much about that. Increasingly, though, doctors and scientists have realized the hard hits aren't something to ignore. Concussions can do real harm, and repeated brain injuries can mean long-term damage. That's a huge realization, especially when we think about children playing football. This is Issues and Ails, WBHM's series of community conversations, and today we're discussing concussions and the price of playing football. We're here at Work Play in Birmingham. Our lineup of guests are ready to take the field, so to speak. The stands are full, with tables and chairs at least, and we'll hear thoughts and questions from the audience a little later on. But let's get to our starters. First of all, we have Bobby Humphrey. He's a Birmingham native, a record-setting running back for the University of Alabama Crimson Tide. He was drafted by the Denver Broncos, also played for the Miami Dolphins, and later coached the Birmingham Steel Dogs arena football team. Also, Kevin Drake, a former UAB quarterback and wide receiver. He also played for a number of NFL teams. He's now program director for the Wise Up Initiative. It's an organization aimed at educating and raising awareness of the dangers of concussions. Dr. Joe Ackerson is a pediatric and sports neuropsychologist. Dr. Ackerson is chair of the Alabama Statewide Sports Concussion Task Force, which helped author Alabama's concussion law that sets out rules for players and coaches regarding concussions. Dr. Sarah Gould is with UAB Sports Medicine at Children's of Alabama, where she specializes in the evaluation and treatment of pediatric concussion patients. Then please welcome our panelists to the stage. And Kevin Drake, I'd like to start with you. You played in the NFL, you played in college. Do you remember the first time you had a concussion?
Yeah.
what do you remember?
I was actually in seventh grade, and it was playing football. And it was the first concussion I had ever sustained, and I was completely knocked out. Came to about halfway to the hospital with my mother driving 90 miles an hour. The concern was great, but, you know, knowing what we know now and knowing what I know now, concussion treatment has come a long way. And we didn't do a good job back then with mine and with the many others that I suffered.
Yeah, well, take me back. I mean, was there any thought given about returning to play? Were you concerned at all? Do you remember any of that?
No. I returned to play the next week, you know, actually, and returned to school. So that happened on a Thursday, so I didn't go back to school till Monday. And that was only because my mother decided to keep me out. But no, I mean, you know, back then there was no discussion of return to play, no discussion of return to think, return to school. And so it was, if you feel better, then go on.
Well, Bobby Humphrey, you played for a number of years as well. And do you remember the word concussion really even coming up, even being part of the conversation?
No, not really. I do remember the term, you got your bell rung.
Did you get your bell rung a few times?
I got my bell rung a few times. And I think that was kind of what that was commonly used among the players and I guess among some of the coaches as well as the trainers. So you never were evaluated except for when you come on the sideline and they give you the quick evaluation. And if you're no longer seeing stars, then you're good to go. It was kind of back then. So I never actually got labeled as having a concussion. I can't remember one time when I was in college when I really got my bell rung and I went back in for a play or two and 10 guys went to the right and I went to the left. And I got streamed at, yelled at, and put back in, and 10 guys went to the right, and I went to the left. And I was told to take a few laps because I was messing up practice. But as I was jogging my lap, one of the defensive players who was my roommate, "Huh, man, what are you doing running a lap?" And my reply to him later on, he told me, was that, "I don't know." So at that particular point in time, I was evaluated, and I was diagnosed as having a concussion. You know, I didn't know at the time.
Didn't know at the time. Well, Dr. Sarah Gould, you know, I'm sure you've heard these stories, confusion of not being able to really think clearly. From a scientific perspective, I mean, what is happening? What is a concussion? We hear the brain is bruised, but what's actually happening here?
We describe concussion as a functional deficit, and what that means is the brain is not working correctly. We describe it as a functional rather than a structural deficit. I think the easiest way to think of that is if you take a snow globe and you shake that snow globe up, nothing is broken or damaged, everything's still the same as it was before, but everything is really chaotic, all the little pieces are kind of flying, and that's sort of what's going on in your brain. The connections, everything's sort of gone a little bit haywire, and the neurons can't talk to each other as well as they could before you did that.
So what causes it? Is it simply just a blow to the head, just getting hit really hard, your bell rung?
It can be a direct force to the head. It could be a force to the body causing like a whiplash type injury that shakes the head, anything that can really disrupt those connections.
And Dr. Joe Atkerson, you know, as you see individuals who've suffered from concussions, how do we treat it? And I guess how has that changed over time?
Well, it's very interesting. I suspect that both Kevin and Bobby were very familiar with smelling salts, and that was the primary treatment for concussions back in the day. It was getting them aroused, making sure that they could walk a straight line, and then putting them back in. And if they messed up too bad, making them run laps, and, which probably aggravated everything. What we know now is that it's important that you pull people out of play immediately, because the vast majority of concussions we expect a total complete recovery from. But you can hurt your chances of that total complete recovery if you have another concussion, another injury before you've completely recovered from the first one. So the most important message for everybody is, if you think you've had a concussion, get out of contact, get out of play immediately, and then let an appropriately trained medical professional like a certified athletic trainer or team physician evaluate you to determine whether you've had a concussion or not. So that's number one, is remove from injury. We don't want a second injury. The second one is an appreciation that because, as Dr. Gould pointed out, the brain is now kind of going haywire. I like to use the term, it's an energy crisis for the brain. The brain cannot generate nor use the energy it needs in order to function properly. So the way that you allow it to recover is you give it this rest time, so you're not continually depleting the energy stores of the brain. And after the brain has recovered adequately, then we can challenge it again, whether it's academic work or physical exertion. After we've ascertained that you are still functioning well with mental exertion, with physical exertion, then they can begin that return to play and return to think protocol.
And so one thing I'm hearing from you that people may not realize is that you can recover from a concussion. It's not a, there aren't permanent effects if you treat it properly, as far as we know.
That's correct. Now, that doesn't mean every concussion will be that way, but the vast majority of concussions, we do expect a complete recovery as long as you are not allowed to go back in and have a second injury on top of that one.
Well, I'll throw this out to Dr. Gould or Dr. Atkerson. Are there particular misconceptions or myths that you find when you talk to parents or players around concussions?
One of the most common ones is that you have to have been knocked out to have a concussion. And we know now that that's not the case. Matter of fact, the vast majority of concussions, there is no loss of consciousness. Now, if you've had loss of consciousness, there's a greater possibility of long-term problems. So we know that's an important variable to understand. But it's not something that you expect to see in most concussions. I think the other thing is that there is a set time frame Like if you've been out 3 days, you should be okay by now. Well, for some people it's 3 days, for some people it's 3 months. And we have to understand that recovery from concussion is as individualized as the brain of the person that has the concussion.
One of the common misconceptions I run into a lot is parents will say, I went to the ER and they didn't give us a CT scan. Like I tried to explain to them, the reason we get a CT scan is because we're looking for injury to the brain or bleeding in the brain. And the exposure to radiation is actually something that we really need to be concerned about as well.
You're listening to Issues and Ails, Concussions and the Price of Playing Football. I'm Andrew Yeager. We're talking with former Alabama and NFL football player Bobby Humphrey, also former UAB quarterback and wide receiver Kevin Drake, Alabama statewide sports concussion task force chair Dr. Joe Ackerson, and also Dr. Sarah Gould with UAB Sports Medicine at Children's of Alabama. And Bobby Humphrey, how have you seen attitudes change to this issue over the course of your involvement with football? Obviously, at the time you were playing, it wasn't much of a concern. But how did you see sort of this idea that this is something we need to take note of? How did that creep in?
Well, I think with a lot of it has come about with a lot of the former NFL players who are now really being affected by what turned out to be early in their years as a your bell rung now to a concussion, now to having serious brain injuries. So I think that has brought a lot of awareness to it. And, you know, so the media coverage that has been covering has kind of informed people and have put people on somewhat of a caution.
Dr. Gould, you know, you're approaching this from the medical side, but you do hear voices that say, look, this is overblown. Not every kid who plays football is going to suffer injury, is not going to suffer long-term effects. What's your sense of that, or what's your response to that notion?
Well, I think the notion that the only football generates concussions is something that we really need to address, because soccer, women's soccer, actually is also a major cause of concussion. You know, it is important to get the word out, not just for our boys who are playing football, but also for our girls. And we have all, Dr. Ackerson and I, have treated people from all different kinds of sports, basketball, cheerleading, you know, you name it, we've probably seen somebody who has a concussion. The idea that it's just football is something that we're trying to educate people about, that it's all sports, really. Anything where you can injure yourself can result in a concussion. As to the other part, I think we're doing a really good job, you know, with the Wise Up Foundation. They're really getting the word out. You know, I haven't been doing this quite as long as Dr. Ackerson has, but even in the amount of time that I've been doing it, I'm seeing the attitudes changing.
But is it overblown? Are we getting too worried about this?
I will piggyback on something that Dr. Gould just pointed out. If you look at the data, most concussions do not occur in football. Most concussions do not occur within organized sports. Most concussions occur when kids are out there being kids, doing kid things. So I think what's important is we want people to be aware of what a concussion is and when it happens, so that whether they're in the playground with their son, or they're at the swimming pool with their daughter, that they know how to recognize a concussion and the importance of immediately responding to that. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I was going to add to that. Being a former player and doing what I get to do now and going out and trying to raise awareness, I get that question, or I get something along those lines of, okay, you played football, but now are you saying that football is too dangerous to play? And I think, you know, an appropriate response to that is, if you look when football from its inception basically came from rugby. That's where football came. And then for the first 30 years of football, it was one of the most dangerous and violent sports there was. There was no forward pass. It was a scrum, basically. And then, you know, we've come a long way. So once we introduced the forward pass in the game of football, it became vastly more safe than it was. I mean, people were actually dying playing football. What people need to understand is the reason that we address football is because it's the number one concussion sport that there is. And what we've learned through what we're seeing now is there are long-term effects to repetitive brain trauma that's not handled properly. So if your number one sport where you get concussions is, you know, it's not being talked about, or something's not being done about it, or there's not changes being made, then we're failing as a society, and we're failing our children that play this sport, and we're failing the guys that play it on Sundays and on Saturdays. there are going to be changes, but the changes are not to change the concept of football. The changes are made to make the game safer for those that play it.
I'll turn now to some questions from the audience, and this would be for Dr. Gould or Dr. Atkerson. Are there levels of concussions? Are there different types of concussions?
We used to use a grading system for concussion, but we've really moved away from that because the grading system was based on the length of loss of consciousness, and research has shown that the length of loss of consciousness does not correlate to the duration of symptoms.
So along those same lines, not all of us are athletic trainers, not all of us have this expertise. If I'm a parent, what do I look for in my kid?
First thing is that almost all concussions are going to have some kind of alteration of awareness. Now, if you're in a helmeted sport, that's harder to figure out. But if your kid's on the playground, you can look in their eyes. You can talk to them. Are they moving funny? Are they acting funny? Are they having difficulty following directions? Are they complaining of a headache? Are there problems with their balance? Do they seem to be weak on one side or the other? Any obvious changes in the way that they normally function, including speech, you would need to go ahead and get that evaluated by a physician.
Another question here, and this sort of plays into something I believe, Kevin Drake, you were talking about grabbing the smelling salts and running away. For players, what's the role of player self-advocacy in dealing with this issue of concussion? And particularly when we think about younger kids, what can we expect from them?
Well, the way I explain this when I'm able to talk to kids and talk to athletes is we used to talk about, you have to be aware of signs and symptoms. You need to understand that. But the problem is that if you're expecting a concussed kid to recognize signs and symptoms, first you have to take a step back and go, well, wait a minute, I'm asking a kid with a brain injury to recognize his own symptoms. And there's many reasons why most athletes, and Bobby knows this, why they won't either say something's going on or that they know they've suffered a concussion. One, and we've seen this on studies that we've done, is that kids, first and foremost, they're not going to pull themselves out of the game because they don't want to let their teammates down. Second is the words that we use with kids is like, you suck it up, you're not tough, you're being a wimp, or people just don't believe them. But the way I try to approach kids now is peer on peer, looking out for each other. The reason we play sports, whether most people agree with me or not about this, but the reason we play sports is to win the game. That's why we keep score. If your teammate is not giving you the best chance to win the game, he's actually a detriment to your team at that point. If you've got somebody on the sideline that can fill his shoes and do a better job than what he can as a concussed athlete, then why wouldn't you want that guy off the field and bring somebody in that can help the team win? Because, again, you're working as a team out there. You don't want one person to hold you back. The other thing is we have to educate kids on the importance of you're running a greater risk at doing more damage to yourself if you continue to play with a concussion. So if that's your teammate, you practice with them every day, you sweat, you bleed, you play for them, and you got each other's back on the field, then if something's going on with him and you recognize that, why wouldn't you have his best interest at heart?
I'm going to piggyback on something Kevin said because – remember when I told you guys everybody went right and I went left? So, I was pretty good running back. Coach Crow, he in the audience back there. He knew I was a good one. I didn't get hit very often, did I? Yeah, I dodged a lot of people as a running back. But that particular hit was not a direct hit. And it was not one of the hits that I would put on my top 20 list as the hardest hit that I've ever taken in my career. But somehow or another, it was a hit that it hit me in the right place, and I can't remember whether or not maybe my head maybe hit the turf or whatever, but they missed it. Nobody knew it. The head coach is blasting me out for going left, and everybody else going because I got up, went back to the huddle, like nothing happened, and nobody knew what was going on. It didn't draw a scene. It was like, it wasn't one of those hits where they go, whoo. And the only way they recognize is that I went one way, which was the wrong way on the first play, and then I went the wrong way on the second play. And they finally figured out, and I couldn't remember why I was even running. So that's what's the identification, that they finally recognized that it was a concussion. So it can get missed, and in my case, it did get missed until later on I was diagnosed.
Another question from the audience, and I believe we'll wrap up with this, but ask it to each panelist, and this perhaps is the big overall question. Knowing what you know now, would you allow your child to play football?
Sorry.
Bobby Humphreys, Humphrey, you,
yes.
And your son does play football.
And my son does play football. And knowing what I know now, I think right now we are far in advance than we once were. And I will allow him to play, but I do think the trainers are the caretakers for those athletes. They got to keep the coach who wants them back in the game off them and say, hey, he is not ready to go back into play. And if we treat it properly, we solve the problem. So my answer is yes.
Yeah. And Kevin Drake?
Do I have to answer this? Knowing what I know now, if I'm being completely honest with you, and again, I am in a different situation more so than most parents are. I would not let my son play the game of football, contact football, until he was 14. And the reason I wouldn't do that is because I know how, through the knowledge that I've gained, is I know how important it is the years between up until when they're 12, 13, or 14 years old, the brain is developing at a great rate at that time. And there is a lot of development to be made. Now, it's not completely developed. We all know that at the age of 12, 13, or 14. But some things can be developed in a different way. If you take the brain and you shake it up and it's trying to develop in a certain pattern and you mix all that up, it's not that it's just not going to develop, but it's going to develop in a different way. But I'm also sitting here as a former NFL, you know, wide receiver and a quarterback in college. I can take my son at the age from age 6 to age 13 or 14, and I can develop him into a better football player and never see him on the field making contact with anybody. That's my personal decision, and that's what I would do if I was in that situation. I've got a third girl on the way, so I don't have to really worry about that. So.
Just a moment or so left. Dr. Gould, Dr. Ackerson, would you like to try to play football? And Dr. Ackerson, you did.
Yes. My son still plays. My son plays college football. He played high school football. One of his first years of playing was fortunately with Coach Humphrey here. I learned so much from Coach Humphrey in terms of what not to do that I wish I'd known the year before. Because it's daddy ball, and that's what we have to get away from. So I concur with Kevin, amen, and hallelujah to everything you just said. We need less hitting. We can improve that, I think, by improving the sport. Yeah, I'd let my kids play, and I let my daughter play soccer, the second most dangerous sport. And so my kids are out there playing, but we're trying to keep it safer, and I think we're making a difference.
I will say yes as well, as long as one of these gentlemen sitting beside me is the coach for the team.
I'd like to thank all of our panelists for joining us today. I just heard from Dr. Sarah Gould with UAB Sports Medicine at Children's of Alabama. Also, Dr. Joe Ackerson, Alabama Statewide Sports Concussion Task Force Chair, former UAB quarterback Kevin Drake, and also former Alabama player Bobby Humphrey. I thank you very much all for joining us today. We'll continue the discussion here in just a moment. I'm Andrew Yeager. This is Issues and Ails, Concussions and the Price of Playing Football on your NPR news station, 90.3 WBHM and 91.5 WSGN. Welcome back. This is Issues and Ails, Concussions and the Price of Playing Football on your NPR news station, 90.3 WBHM and 91.5 WSGN. I'm Andrew Yeager. We're here at WorkPlay in Birmingham for a discussion about the risks football players face when it comes to concussions, risks parents, players, coaches, and others are increasingly uneasy with. We've talked some about the science, some about how attitudes around football are changing, and so now, what do we do? We'll hear some thoughts and questions in a bit from our audience that's gathered here, but now some perspective from our panelists. Joining us is Dr. Michael Bergeron, President and CEO of the Youth Sports of the Americas and Chair of the National Youth Sports Health and Safety Institute. He's also on the staff of LEMAC Sports Medicine and Orthopedics. Also, Dr. Laura Dreher is Director of Psychological and Neuropsychological Clinic Research Services at UAB. She's also Chair of the Alabama Statewide Return to Learn Task Force. Matt Price is the head football athletic trainer at Samford University. He previously worked on the athletic training staff at Marshall University. Shauna Holly is a member of the Hoover Youth Football Board of Directors. She's also the mother of three boys, two of whom still play football. And Johnny Webb, he's a coach in the Irondale Titans Youth Football League. And welcome to all of our panelists. Well, I want to start with you, Johnny, because a lot of this concern comes from parents, parents whose kids play football and they see these dangers. And I'm wondering for you, during your time coaching youth football, what conversations have you had with parents? What do you hear from parents when it comes to these issues of safety?
Basically, the concussions. Pretty much lose a lot of kids just because of the concussion. And the hardest part is just trying to get a parent to say, yes, we'll come and we'll play football. Dads, it's a plus. You know, they want the kid to be out there, but they have to ask mom. So I got to win mom over to get the kid to the park. And one thing I have to tell her about the program, and number one thing is the concussion. So I have to let her know that the coaches are being pretty much trained on concussion. And with me being the AD, the athletic director, that's my job. I got to go from field to field, make sure each coach is doing their job.
Is it harder to win parents over now than it was, say, 5, 10 years ago?
Yes. And what they're looking for now is the programs that we're going up and teaching each coach that we have. Because like they said at the first panel, that these are coach dads. And each 45 years, you have a new set of dads. Not the same coaches are going through the same thing each year. So it's just a constant routine every 5 years.
Well, Shauna Holly, you're involved with youth football in Hoover. You know, what do you think when you hear those parents say, I don't know that I want my kid to play football. It's too dangerous.
Well, I've been on the Hoover Youth Football Board since 2010, and I am the only female on the board. So I do get a lot of those questions. I have three sons, all of which have played, two are still playing. I'm also in charge of certification of all of our coaches, so I'm very confident in talking to our parents, especially moms, about the training that our coaches go through. All of our coaches, as if they are inside the fence, meaning they're going to be anywhere inside the field with the players, they all have to go through the CDC concussion training, the LEMAC Prepare 1 training, and a background check. So I feel very comfortable in explaining to them that I feel like our coaching staff are very well prepared.
Well, Matt Price, you're working at the collegiate level. How have you seen attitudes or approaches to these safety issues around concussions changed in your time as an athletic trainer?
It's definitely changing. The awareness is out there of concussions, and coaches are obviously concerned, one, because they don't want the play of football to change. But it's changing for the better because they're recognizing that it is a problem. But at the collegiate level, it's a little different than youth sports. Collegiate level, you have an athletic trainer. That's who you depend on to recognize a concussion and to evaluate that and let that coach know what is going on with that athlete. And then as far as let the parents know as well. I think everything's being positive because the coach really relies on that athletic trainer to take care of that athlete.
I want to jump down here to Dr. Bergeron, because you're involved in some of this overseeing of the issues of safety with youth sports and youth football. I guess, what are the issues in terms of safety that we really need to be focused on now that we know what we know about concussions, or there's perhaps greater awareness?
That's a great question. The thing that we've gotten the benefit of, all the attention on concussion, has really opened the opportunity to talk a lot about all of the issues facing youth athletes. And it's not just head injury, but it's a lot of things, whether it's overuse injury and a lot of other issues. So I think what it's done is given us a platform to discuss health and safety on a variety of issues. Now, Kevin, before in the previous panel, mentioned that it's all about winning. And the bottom line is, it is about winning. And kids and parents and coaches are there to win. But what parents and coaches and administrators really need to recognize, and we're trying to push this message, is that when you improve health and you improve safety, you're improving the opportunity for optimal performance. They're not in opposition. And so a lot of coaches in the early day, or maybe even still, you hear say, well, that's fine, and of course we want to be healthy and safe, but I've got a game to play on Friday night. It's critical so that everybody understands that a healthier athlete, a safer athlete, is a better athlete.
Well, Dr. Laura Dreher, you're chair of the Alabama Statewide Return to Learn Task Force. You know, what is that? How does that relate to the concussion discussion?
Sure. So we talked, there's been a lot of research done with return to play issues, and a lot of the literature, scientific literature, is focused on what are predictors of getting back into the game, and as you mentioned, getting them safely back into the game. But there's been less scientific or empirical attention based on return to learn and what's the appropriate length of time for rest and recovery, getting back into school and using your brain, because anything doing homework, video games, that requires cognitive energy or the way you think about things, and it's how much time and recovery is needed before they go back in, because we all think, you know, you're missing school, you're getting behind, but, you know, what's that balance there that we have to start looking at empirically? What is appropriate time to go back to school and not get too far behind, but you want to have that brain recovering and healing.
So what are the big questions in that field? What don't we have the answer to that we would like the answers to regarding returning to the classroom?
I think some of the gaps are how much length of time does one need to stay out of after a concussion? Also, what types of accommodations are appropriate? Working with the teachers, I know with my collaborators, the Alabama Department of Rehab Services, we did a study with teachers. We polled them from middle school teachers up to college level. You know, what is your knowledge about concussions, and would you like more information? Do you feel you need it? And a lot of them were saying yes. You know, they recognized some of the basic symptoms, but another aspects that they were saying that they really wanted guidelines. They want some guidelines how to inform parents and their students when is appropriate to get back in.
Well, you're listening to Issues and Ails, Concussions and the Price of Playing Football. I'm Andrew Yeager. We're talking with Alabama Statewide Return to Learn Task Force Chair, Dr. Laura Dreher, also head of the Youth Sports of the Americas, Dr. Michael Bergeron, Samford University athletic trainer Matt Price, and Hoover Youth Football Board member Shauna Holly, also Irondale Titans Youth Football League coach Johnny Webb. And perhaps Matt or Johnny or Shauna, this would be an appropriate question to direct to you. We've heard today that football is safer, that we know more about how to protect kids. What techniques, what technology, what are we doing that maybe we weren't doing 5, 10, 15 years ago to protect kids?
Well, I guess I can speak for what Hoover does. We now pay very close attention to our football helmets. We only use Shutt helmets. Shutt does all of our reconditioning. We have a very strict program of when our helmets are reconditioned. We will use them for 2 years, then they're reconditioned, then we use them for 2 more years, then they're reconditioned, then we take them out of service. So we don't use a football helmet for the entire time that a football helmet is valid. So back in the past, I don't think football helmets were necessarily tracked that tightly. We didn't know the age of the helmets. We didn't really know when they were reconditioned, but we're very, very clear on how that works.
So you monitor the helmets, the equipment very closely. Johnny, do you have want to add to that?
We do about the same thing with the helmets. Also, we do a lot of the clinics with some of the college coaches to make sure that what we are teaching the kids are the proper way to tackle. We basically trying to make sure they're not using head-to-head. Anything that's going to resolve the helmet making contact, well, pretty much put that out.
Dr. Bergeron?
Sure. There's been a lot of advances in technology that have really opened up our eyes as to what's going on. Everyone's heard of the HIT system where they have the accelerometers in the helmet, and that has really not only made those of us who study this field aware of the frequency of impacts, but it's also makes us aware of the range of impacts. And you see impacts at the collegiate level of force, even at the youth football level. Not as often, but it can happen. We've also, because of that accelerometer technology, have recognized that you can get a concussion with a hit at a very low level of the range of linear or angular force. And so it's really helped us to be aware of when you get a concussion. It may be a very, very low impact. It may be two in a row that caused a concussion. The other thing is that from the medical and science side, there's been just a rampant surge in ability to more objectively determine when somebody is ready or not to go back to activity, whether that activity is physical activity or academic activity. And lastly, some of the science has really revealed that everyone knows, well, follows, you know, you shouldn't be active and you should need to rest right away. But after a while, it's become more apparent that physical activity and academics or, you know, mental stimulus is actually can be recuperative and part of the recovery process. So again, the science of determining what has happened, why it's happened, and how to track it has been just going very, very fast, and it's very difficult, frankly, to keep up with the literature because so much information is coming out, but we're much better informed as to what contributed to the injury, as well as better informed as to when it has fully resolved.
Yeah, I do want to bring up the issue of oversight, because there is a law in Alabama that puts rules on coaches and players in terms of this issue. There are governing organizations, the NCAA, the organizations that oversee high school athletics as well. Is more oversight necessary? Is less oversight? Can these groups police themselves on their own? You know, what's your sense of the level of oversight given our concern about concussions? And I'll just throw it out there to the panel in general.
We don't want to have to legislate everything, but you know, oftentimes behavior changes don't happen until there's laws. And so that, I think it's safe to say that certainly the concussion legislation, which is a little bit different in every state, certainly has increased the awareness and certainly has started the process of getting an athlete attended to properly. So that's a good thing. The other thing, though, too, is that the governing bodies, and I've served on a number of national task forces and committees looking at this, have the benefit of assembling the experts from around the country, around the world, to assess the current science. Your average coach, your average parent does not have that advantage, or even the school administrator doesn't have that advantage. So such as the recent guidelines that came out from the National Federation of State High School Associations, which I was a part of, as was the NCAA, as was a number of football coaches around the country, as was Pop Warner and the NFL even, came out with the recommendations based on the science that we really need to limit head impact exposure.
And I'll piggyback on that a little bit. The league that we play for, we do follow the Alabama High School Athletic Association rules, and we are allowed 22 practices before the season starts. The first 4 days are conditioning. 5 through 15, we can have full contact no more than 2 hours per week, not on consecutive days, and then 16 plus through the end of the season, we have 90 minutes of full contact. So our youth athletes are not hitting every day as they have in the past.
You are listening to Issues and Ails, Concussions and the Price of Playing Football. I'm Andrew Yeager. We're talking with Shauna Holley with the Hoover Youth Football, also Irondale Titans Youth Football League coach Johnny Webb, Samford University athletic trainer Matt Price, Alabama statewide Return to Learn Task Force Chair Dr. Laura Dreher, and the head of Youth Sports of the Americas Dr. Michael Bergeron. I have a number of audience questions that I want to get to and try to get to as many of these as possible. And Shauna, actually one directed to you, and Johnny Webb, you probably can comment on this as well. Since the Alabama concussion law has been in effect, are you seeing more concussions being identified?
Our league, we average around 450 youth players from ages K-1 through 6th grade. Since I've been involved with the program since 2010, we've had one concussion that was recorded. We know about it. I think the awareness of concussions is good. It's good for parents, athletes, and coaches. Sometimes, however, though, our younger players hear the talk about it and sometimes get real confused on what a concussion is and what a headache is. And then you have to take the whole situation very serious. They have to come out from playing.
Johnny Webb, what's your sense of how things are in Irondale before and after the law?
Only within the last 13 years, we only had two issues of concussions, which is great.
Another question from the audience. What about the weight of players? Should that be limited? If you have 300-pound people hitting each other over and over again, that would seem to spur a few concussions and other injuries.
Well, I can kind of answer that one because I have a big boy. we do, in the league that we play in, we do have a restricted weight to be a skill player. So, for example, my son is in sixth grade. That weight is 130 pounds. So you have to weigh 130 or below to play a skill position. Anything over and beyond that, you have to play with inside the tackles. So we don't have our bigger boys open field tackling.
I don't know if you have any players in Sanford team that are quite that large, Matt Price, but is weight a concern, just the sheer size of these players?
Not really. I mean, you don't see a correlation there at all, especially at the collegiate level. Just to kind of go back to what they were talking about, I think the education for the coaches is great because we do it at our level as well, but I would also say that athletic training is changing too. I know athletic training has always had the rap of suck it up and go back out there, or you know, do the smelling salt or whatever, but we're trained to diagnose and evaluate athletes that could have a concussion. And I think one thing that could benefit at the youth level is everyone have an athletic trainer out there to watch their kids who's been trained in that. And that's just one set of eyes that's, you know, helpful.
And we actually have a question. Do you think certified athletic trainers should be required if you're playing contact sports, be it youth, middle school, high school? Should that just be?
No question.
No question.
They should, definitely. And it's actually becoming more prevalent because I know when I was in high school, we didn't have an athletic trainer. We're getting to the point now where athletic trainers are out there for not only for every school, but every level of the school too. You know, youth, middle school, and high school.
Yeah. Dr. Dreher?
I was just going to tag along onto that. Some of the discussions we've had with the Return to Learn Committee and in some of our other research, some of the challenges just out in the community, especially in rural areas where maybe they can't afford, you know, people to be there or physicians on staff, like versus Hoover or other places, that's definitely a challenge. And the location, we all know, being able to get quickly to a hospital if needed and get that appropriate care can be a barrier too. You know, peewee level or a little bit above that, it's hard because a lot of times there are parents out there doing the coaching and they don't have that training. So it's just another thing to have that continued discussion, dialogue.
I have a few audience questions here dealing with the issue of protective equipment and sort of technology in general, because I think we sort of have this feeling in our culture, this sense that technology will solve our problems. You know, if there's something that needs to be overcome, technology will do it. But there's also the idea in sports that if a player knows they're wearing a helmet and believes that that helmet protects him, that they'll play harder, they'll play more aggressively, and actually makes the problem worse. And just to the panel in general, I don't know who wants to take it, but what's your sense of whether that actually plays out in practice?
I think clearly there is a sense, especially among the younger athletes, that if they have the gear on, that they're invincible. And we do see more aggressive contact, more aggressive tackling, you know, when they feel that they're well protected. Unfortunately, what we also see in this world of concussion recovery is a lot of products out there that are purported to be protective against concussion, or if somebody has one, you want to wear this cushioned device to help, and unfortunately they're using these to help get people back to play sooner, and this is just a huge mistake that is really, again, becoming problematic.
Along those same lines, do helmets prevent concussions? Seems pretty simple, but do they actually prevent concussions?
We can say that in unison, right?
Yeah,
no.
It's the force to the brain that causes concussion.
So it has nothing to do, it doesn't matter what you put on your head, as far as we know.
There can be some almost unmeasurable change in you know, how force is distributed, and to be honest, some of the newer technologies, even in the military, with helmet technology and materials that can disperse the force a little bit better, that's going to have some, not to use the wrong word, impact on concussion risk. But as Matt said, you know, when a brain is moving forward and it rapidly changes direction, you know, it's that change in direction that really causes the stretch on the neurons and the damage to those you know, brain cells, and that reverse of direction is not going to be changed by whatever technology you have.
I think I just wanted to piggyback onto that. If you think about a helmet, sort of like a seatbelt, you know, you're going to get into a car, you still can have a risk for an accident, but that likelihood is going to go down a little bit wearing your seatbelt. Same thing with putting on a helmet; it's going to help, but not totally prevent it.
We have a few moments here left. I want to finish with this question because we've had a lot of discussion today about what we know, what we don't know around concussions. And one of the common themes is that football is safer than it's been before because of what we're learning and because of the increased awareness. What changes do you see around football, be it youth, high school, college, professional? What changes do you see over the next 5, 10, 25 years? I know it's dangerous to make predictions about the future, but what do you foresee, Dr. Bergeron?
I think we're seeing in football what we're seeing in all sports. I think we're seeing that it's being recognized that conditioning takes time. Fatigue puts you at risk for all kinds of injuries, including head injuries. We're recognizing that there's a lot of value in sport without breaking somebody down. And if you truly want to keep an athlete in the game, whatever sport it is, including football, and you truly want that athlete to reach whatever level of athletic success that athlete is capable of, it's best to improve the health, to improve the safety, and give that athlete the opportunity to do that. And so I think you're seeing a culture change across all sports, recognizing that, if, for example, in football preseason, you can't condition an athlete in 2 weeks. The body just doesn't respond that way. It takes a long time, but it can sure hurt somebody really fast. So I think the whole concept of long-term athletic development and allowing that athlete not only to condition properly, but to recover properly, whether there's an injury or not, is really latching onto all sports. And I think you're going to see a change in football, like you'll see in other sports, where it's just becoming a healthier, long-term athletic environment to help that athlete to be more resilient and to stay in the game and to achieve success.
Yeah. Dr. Greer, what do you see happening in the coming decade?
I wish I had a crystal ball, but
we all do, yes.
I think... It seems like a concussion tsunami right now with the sports, with the military. I think a lot of things are coming together, and it's getting more recognized, more media attention, more funding, that it's really going to drive some changes with policy, with science. And, I mean, it'd be just great. I mean, think about the helmet back in, like, the 50s or 30s. Going back, I've watched some old footage of Alabama games or something, you know, and where we are now with helmets. You never know if we'll have something... You know, again, I'm shaking a crystal ball here and looking into it. You know, something with a helmet you put on and it knows, like, your body temperature, you know, your synapses, axons, all that. It can detect, you know, what's a high level for risk or going back in or whatnot. And so the technology part is one that I think you're definitely going to see improvements in. It's growing, and hopefully our medical care, too, in terms of imaging, other scans, but maybe there's, you know, eventually... over time, we'll have better imaging tests. And then also, I think, safer protocols for return to learn and return to play even, and continuing to improve on that.
Yeah, Matt Price, thoughts about the future?
Kind of agree with them. I mean, you just don't know. But, you know, we do have, it's starting to become more evident that we do have the return to learn trickling down from, you know, college down to high school, because we have now... The NCAA is now requiring us, well, the Big Five conference, to do a return to learn policy. And so we've picked it up and we've incorporated it into our concussion policy, and our team doctors are basically telling us how we should model that. And like we said, you don't have anything concrete. It's basically upon the symptoms that the athlete has. And so I think technology is going to be huge, and it's just making it safer as it is, but you just don't know.
Shauna Holly, from the youth sports perspective, do you see anything?
That's a tough question for me to answer, because their backgrounds are much better than mine when it comes to that. I think at the youth level, we just have to continue to train our coaches, and that comes from the work that they're doing. We have to make sure that we're following all the rules that come down from the high school level, and just try to make sure our coaches are as well informed as they can be. That's really all we can do at a youth level.
And Johnny Webb, any other thoughts?
Those guys that made it to the National League, that level, I see them coming back to the youth and doing a lot more to make sure that it's more of a safer environment for them, and making sure that we all are on one accord in their safety.
Well, that brings this discussion to a close. I'd like to thank our panelists. Just heard from Johnny Webb, coach with the Irondale Titans Youth Football League, also Hoover Youth Football Board member Shauna Holly, Samford University athletic trainer Matt Price, the chair of the Alabama Statewide Return to Learn Task Force, Dr. Laura Dreer, and the head of Youth Sports of the Americas, Dr. Michael Bergeron. Thank you very much for joining us. First, I'd like to thank all of our panelists who have been with us for their thoughts and comments. I'd also like to thank the staff of WorkPlay for hosting the program this evening. Issues and Ales was produced by Rachel Lindley, Will Dahlberg, and Audrey Atkins. Technical support was provided by Daryl McCullough, with additional help from the rest of the WBHM staff. Our general manager is Scott Hanley. I'm Andrew Yeager. Thanks for listening.